This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row studios, in the crap part of Soho, it's the Men in Blazers podcast, Rog.
Ah, Dave.
You okay, Rog? I'm a little worried about you today.
Yeah, my patience. It's a bit... What? Thinner than Robbie Earl's moustache.
Yeah.
Today.
That's thin.
Yeah.
It's pretty
late,
thin.
It's a late night last night.
It was a late night. We went out.
We did.
An evening.
We'll chat about it.
Rog, BlazerCon. Yeah. Are you recovered yet?
Mentally, not. Physically, not.
No, definitely not.
I mean, I talked a bit about my experience last week when I did my sad monologue pod. Which I think is probably truly the saddest thing in the world. One is the loneliest number.
The one man pod.
I don't know if you... It feels like it was months ago, first of all.
Well, you know what my memory's like. I mean, I barely remember anything. I had a great time. I thought BlazerCon was amazing, Rog. We both had family there. I've never had family at any Men in Blazers event ever. My nephews flew in. It was amazing to have them there. It was lovely to see your kids... Your wife, Mrs. B, sitting there front row at the show. Oh, I love that.
It's nice to have so many GFOPs wander up to poor producer Jen Simon.
Yeah. And ask her if she was Mrs.
And
B.
And say, you must be Mrs. B. And the sad look on Jen's face as she realised how big a bullet she dodged. She very politely say,
yeah,
no.
No. And I just thought it was amazing. It was just watching, it was just the highlights for me, watching NBC producer Adam Littlefield after his session on how NBC Sports took the Premier League and how they approached it. Adam Littlefield standing outside the session for 2 hours answering questions from GFOPs.
It's a rock star.
And, you know, Ralph Kruger, Jeff Mostyn, Steve Parrish, watching those guys engage people. Joe Roth, who I used to work with years ago at Disney, you know, watching him around and, you know, the other MLS owners. I think they were opened a lot of eyes over there. I thought they were amazing. That was one of the strongest panels. Just really, really great. And then there are parts where during the day on Saturday, I actually witnessed it like a GFOP. I was just going to sessions, standing in the back around the other GFOPs. The session that Alexi did with John Strong and Brad Friedel was just amazing, passionate. The debate, the argument, the love. In debating where US soccer is and where it's going. It was phenomenal.
Alexi is a remarkable player. I've got to say, Brad Friedel.
Yeah.
He's a fascinating gentleman.
Yeah, he's a truth teller. What I was really impressed with Brad is his willingness to just tell it like it is. There was a moment where he said, the US, and it's not an exact quote, but it's close. The US do not have a single player as good as Moussa Dembele, who he obviously played with, and he's played with the US players. And there was almost a gasp within the crowd. And he just sort of looked out and sort of took that moment and said, I'm sorry, it's true. And it was just a frozen moment. And there are a lot of people in media, and that's why I think that Alexi has come in for a lot of stick, but I think he's been amazing for years. He's been willing to say things that are unpopular. By the way, Brad, no one more dedicated to the future of US soccer. You know, he really sort of put in a blueprint for where it's got to go and talked passionately about it and talked about the overachievement of this side. But it was just a moment of truth-telling that was really, really wonderful.
Thank God we got a few Ryan Mason-level players.
Yeah, it's very, very
true. It's good for the future.
Very, very true.
You know, one thing I didn't talk about, but I've been thinking a lot about this week and particularly after last night, is just the deep connections that the great friends of the pod, the GFOPs who came, have for each other and formed. All based around the shared kind of passion for football. Last night, you and I, we went to the Grantland Wake at Le Poisson Rouge.
Le Poisson Rouge.
A bunch of the writers from Grantland, Jonah Kerry, Rembert, Jason Concepcion, were all on stage reflecting on the past 3 years that they spent together working and the disappearance of their platform. And the crowd, it was packed.
Packed.
Absolutely heaving. They really should have done that event at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, they could have done.
But they hung on every word, the crowd. It was a real reflection of the deep emotional connection that the audience shared with Grantland and the writers that they loved, David.
Yeah, very true.
And what Ralph Kruger, the Southampton chairman, said after BlazerCon, he said, there was just an amazing generosity of spirit was what he said. He said this event could only have happened in America. And he laughed and he said, you know, if you try to bring together footballing CEOs and managers together in England, the moment they'd stand up, the rival fans would just shout them down. He said in most countries, they'd be shouted down before they open their mouth. But there's just a unique and remarkable kind of generosity of spirit here in the United States, which is very interesting to reflect on.
Yeah, long may that continue.
Oh, I was exhausted, though, afterwards, David. Mentally knackered, physically knackered. I wanted to ask you about... I felt no pleasure at all.
Not a shock.
No, I'm beginning to think I've got a medical condition where I lack the ability to take any pleasure in anything. I enjoyed all of it. I just don't take any pleasure in it. I don't take any pride in the weight. I enjoyed the panels. I enjoyed the characters coming together and colliding. There was a moment in that green room at 1 o'clock when it just was just a crazy, eclectic mix of individuals. And I looked around and I thought, this is bonkers. You got the Fox guys over there. Ray Hudson had just walked in. You had a bunch of MLS owners. You had the German Bundesliga crew. You had a lot of English Premier League chairmen and owners getting around. Roberto Martinez was chatting to Sunil Gulati. It was just like a Star Wars bar of
Charlie is a red, running the whole thing, organising everyone.
Introducing people.
Yeah, exactly.
And it did feel proper bonkers at that moment. I enjoyed all of it. I just take no play afterwards. I don't have a pleasure gene. Satisfaction gene.
Yeah, but then again, if I told you that we're not going to do Blazer. If I said, Roger, let's never do BlazerCon again, and next year, November, international break, we're not doing BlazerCon, you'd be devastated.
I would be devastated.
The pursuit of happiness. I just don't think that's your thing. I think you're into surviving and feeling interested and suffering.
Yeah.
Like my mother. Pursuit of happiness and joy.
Glenda.
That's the Devo part of the relationship. I love pursuing happiness, and I mostly do. You like the struggle.
It's not a driver. Happiness.
And you like the things that actually make you happy. You deny yourself happiness. You find joy in denying yourself happiness.
I'd make a very good monk.
You would. You would. You'd be an amazing monk.
The suffering's the
thing. One of the few Jewish monks.
Is that what you're telling me? Suffering is the thing.
Yeah, you like suffering.
I feel a lot better. I like work.
You do like
work. Is the honest truth. I like my family. I like my work.
You like family and work.
Yeah.
Do you like it? Can you think of anything else you like? I love you too, Rog.
Thanks. That was very therapeutic. I feel like we really moved me into a good spot.
You're never going to find pleasure. For years, I've thought, how do I get Rog to enjoy all this a bit more?
Yeah.
And I realised that you enjoy not enjoying things very much.
It's fair.
That's you actually would feel guilty if you were just enjoying it.
Like a nice scotch.
Yeah.
Like a nice Malbec.
Yeah.
Like a nice Everton goal.
Yeah.
And I like a lot of self-loathing.
Well, I'm not sure that Everton goals give you that much pleasure either. It's true. It's very, very true. Hardest thing for me about BlazerCon, I can tell you, there's so many moments that were fantastic. Definitely the hardest thing was in the run-up, in the, hours as we were waiting to open the doors and start checking people in, the news was filtering in over Twitter and watching CNN about the terrible, terrible attacks and violence in Paris. That was a difficult thing to figure out how to handle, how to feel about it, and how to, especially because it was taking place during a football match over there, was not only isolated to the events outside the Stade de France, but it was all over Paris, but it seemed like a football story. That was very tough, Rog.
No, I mean, it was awful, David. I mean, it's also the first pod we've had proper since the devastating attack and the darkness which has descended upon Europe since then. For me, a reminder of two things. I mean, it's Philip Larkin. We must make every moment count. We should be careful of each other. We should be kind while there's still time. And also, it's a reminder about football. For all it does for us in terms of the emotions it provides and the fake meaning that it proffers, it remains, as that old adage goes, football's just the most important, least important thing in the world.
Yeah, there was a lovely moment. There was a couple of French fans, more than a couple, several French fans there, but a guy who spent the whole weekend wearing his France jersey. And it's a moment when we reflected before the final night show on the attacks in France, and that it had been sort of we'd sort of done much of the weekend, had been conducted with a heavy heart, frankly, about what had gone on in Paris. And he just screamed Allez les Bleus, stood up in his shirt. It was just a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful moment, and a reminder of how football will always be front and center in terms of how modern Europeans and how modern Americans think about nationhood and think about pride and think about the collective.
I mean, it's something that Christian Seifert talked about, the Bundesliga CEO. He talked about how in Germany, football is the social glue. He says it brings Germans together, modern Germans, he said, in a way that politics can't and that religion doesn't. I mean, he said that's the role that football now plays, and that's an incredible strength. It also makes you, in this new dark world, an incredible target. I found it very moving. I actually went home to watch the England-France game during the international break, just so I could watch the beginning, the incredible ritual, beautiful ritual.
Fantastic.
Where the players mixed up their teams and stood together around the centre circle. Incredible pageantry for La Marseillaise. I also found it very moving this weekend, David, watching the fans stand in the English Premier League. Every English Premier League game before kickoff, they played a slightly tinny version of La Marseillaise. But it was despite the tinniness, I found it incredibly moving.
Especially because the history, as you made the point to me, when there was some criticism made of the Premier League for doing this, that it felt perhaps some in the British media had sort of said that it felt a little bit outdated to do this. It felt natural to do it in front of the England-France game, but it felt a little outdated to do it in front of the Premier League game. And why had they not done it to honour the Syrians? Or why had they not done it to honour what happened in the Beirut attacks? Or, frankly, what's been happening in Israel for a very long time? And but the connection between France, French players, French managers in the Premier League has been massive.
By the way, I do wonder what goes on through footballers' mind when they play that song. I mean, it's a song that reminds, I guess, most viewers that the world's on the brink of a seismic conflict and spiralling tragedy, and really events are unfurling in unstoppable and dark ways. And the French players, you saw Sylvain Distan, particularly, I mean, very, very moved before playing a game of football. But I do wonder, like, let's say Raheem Sterling, what do you think he thinks about while he's playing? Is he thinking about Europe? Is he thinking about complex predicament, socio-political predicament? Do you think he's thinking about the game ahead, just focusing on the 90 minutes? Do you think he's thinking about cars and girls?
Well, yes. I mean, I think Premier League footballers, you know, one of the reasons they're successful is a lot of athletes manage to sort of blank out a lot of other thought during their playing careers, and they think about what they need to do as professionals to go and get the job done on the field, and they blank out everything else. But let's face it, in thinking about ISIS and being able to process what's going on in this new world order, footballers would not be alone in terms of being confused about how to deal with this, how to process it, and how to actually think about what's going on. This is insanely complicated. There are probably podcasts devoted to thinking about such matters that get it all wrong and don't understand it and can't adequately process the events or even offer any kind of prognosis.
At the end of the day, we're all song and dance men.
Yeah, it's very, very true. It is, I must say, La Marseillaise, my view is, it's such a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful anthem. Really is.
Lyrics are a bit dark, though.
Yeah, well, most national anthems, frankly. I'm sure you're not a big fan of God Save the Queen, Rog.
It's probably not in my top 150. The one I do like is the Japanese national anthem.
Oh, do you know? Don't even start me on the Japanese national anthem, Rog.
I can't remember the lyrics off the top of my head, but it's something to do with moss growing on a stone.
Oh,
it's
I love that image. I love that bit. It just stops in the middle, Rog. Right? It just stops in the middle.
As every
haunting.
Great anthem should.
Haunting, Rog. Okay, we got a packed show. We're going to break down Liverpool's shock 4-1 dismantling of league leaders Manchester City at the Etihad. We're going to discuss the slip, both figurative and literal, that saw Arsenal fall to West Brom and the ever-urbane Tony Pulis. And we gather around to listen to the latest chapter of the Leicester City story, a feel-good fairy tale in which a lovable underdog plants its flag atop the Premier League summit, plus celebrations in Stumptown and Columbus after the first leg of the MLS Conference Finals, Roger.
By the way, this was a weekend, David, in which I became sure that Twitter's dying.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've been thinking the same thing.
On Saturday, I was watching United play a fascinating game against Watford. You had the Clásico upcoming.
Yeah.
You also had City and Liverpool looming. Massive, massive day of football. And there was barely any chatter on Twitter at all. I mean, compared to this time last year, it used to be stuffed full of game day journalists travelling all over England, giving you a sense of the thoughts, the ideas, the notions, the feel of being on the road at the game. They'll be tweeting from all over Europe. Definitely feels, Dave, and I don't know if I'm alone in this, feels like a spigot that's running dry.
Yeah, well, it's like sort of a news feed. There's very little, you know, I sort of feel like what Twitter used to have more of is sort of creative, you know, it's a creative outlet for people. They were really, really clever with their observations and what they wrote about. I think now it feels like a news feed with sort of occasional spewing hate, which I don't particularly enjoy. Anyway, there you go, Rog. To the football. We're now 13/38 of the way through the Premier League season. The script writers have proven they're all in on the Leicester City narrative, taking them from a relegation scrap to the Premier League's apex in just a matter of months. Let's crack open that Guinness, Roger. You got so much better at that.
I'm terrified of Lexi getting angry at me for spillage.
Too right. Cheers, Roger.
Oh, to Thanksgiving and to football, David.
Yeah. Okay, first off, Newcastle 0, Leicester 3. Claudio Ranieri's men thump a hapless Newcastle, thanks in part to the right boot of who else? Jamie Vardy, Rog. The wiry striker scored in his 10th straight Premier League game, equaling Ruud van Nistelrooy's record. Leonardo Ochoa and Shinji Okazaki added second-half goals to secure the points and vault a fairy tale Leicester to the top of the table. This time last year, Rog, they had 10 points. Now they're top of the Premier League.
Oh, at History Shrocks tweeted us, the script writers have really stepped up. This is Shonda Rhimes level intrigue.
It is. It's very good. Could be on ABC on a Thursday night.
And the hero, Davo, yeah. Jamie Vardy.
Amazing.
I mean, what a prime time character he'd be on ABC, Davo.
You couldn't really write it.
Guy Ritchie could probably write it.
Yeah. It's just hard to write that level of backstory. I mean, it's more backstory than goal, Rog. It's kind of amazing that, you know, Stocksbridge Park Steels, Halifax Town, Fleetwood Town. And he wasn't like, oh, spent like 6 months there and 3 months there. He spent years at Stocksbridge Park Steels. I mean, never had a whiff of Premier League football, even Championship football.
But he's got one of those kind of apparently cocky demeanours. Everyone they've interviewed in the English papers have unearthed everybody at every level he's ever played with.
Well, he's scored goals at every level.
Wherever he turned up, he was always incredibly cocky the first day he turned up in the locker room, told everyone where he was going, told everyone he was headed to the Premier. I mean, he could not have been further away. Yeah, it's like being like single-A baseball where he began, but just telling everyone, one day, I'm going to make it to the big time. He's ripped from the comic books that we used to read, the kind of Billy's Boots, the hotshot Hamish, kind of cartoon characters who come from remote areas and become superstars. I mean, I the more I think about him, the more I believe he's like the offspring of the Hoosiers and Seabiscuit if they got together and had a bastard offspring, Davo. Yeah, the only person in sports who's got a demeanour like his, a persona like his, is Kristaps Porzingis. But he was a first round draft pick.
Booed, as producer Ziplo has always reminds us whenever we mention him when he was drafted. But he was a first round draft pick.
And now absolutely dominant in every regard.
Yeah.
And in this, as he scored in his 10th straight game, a player who at the beginning of the season in the ones to watch columns, no one wrote Jamie Vardy.
Yeah.
No one. And everyone is talking about him now. At Crash Foster 08 tweeted us and said, if you asked anyone who Jamie Vardy was 3 months ago, they would have gone, I don't know, is she a model? Hashtag the new English Jesus.
It's hard to think why he didn't get noticed earlier, because he's got speed, unteachable. Rog, he's an unbelievable finisher. Just the power of his shots, his sort of willingness to sort of take a chance. Just hard to think why he didn't latch on earlier. I think he was a young guy at Sheffield Wednesday.
Oh, his story, it's ripped from the pages of Dickens. I mean, he's like a footballing Oliver. He grew up in the poorhouse. He asked for more. He was a pickpocket. He was a chimney sweep. He was seen around town with Nancy the prostitute with the heart of gold.
Yep.
And now, Davo, he's on Real Madrid's radar.
Hmm.
Why would he go there now? Why would he leave? Why would he leave the English league leaders for a Spanish outfit or a meltdown? But it's an incredible achievement. 10 straight games. I mean, consistency, collective performance as an individual, but also as a team. and just the searing form of a lifetime for an individual. 86 days those goals were spread over. Mm-hmm. And he's maintained the endeavour, the hunger, the desire, the commitment to run those channels. He pressures opposing defenders. He chases everything, even lost causes in a way. You can see it just inspires everyone that's around him.
What Leicester have is that amazing triple threat as well, Rog. You know, Mahrez and Ochoa, a player I'd almost sort of forgotten, you know, was so good at the beginning of last season for Leicester, now sort of chiming in with assists and goals of his own.
Well, they're fast. They're super fast. They actually boast three of the top 10 fastest players in the Premier League.
Huh.
Mark Albrighton.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Schlupp.
Yeah.
And Vardy. Vardy can sprint at 22 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Sounds faster than like a...
gazelle.
Yeah. And they run, and they run, and they run. I mean, ultimately, Vardy's achievement is a collective one. Kasper Schmeichel, he called their style. He said, we're a bit scruffy, we're open, but we are expansive, and we are fast. And they're all too much for dire Newcastle, a team. Oh, they're hurting in central midfield even more than Arsenal are, which is saying something, Devo.
Yeah.
Jack Colback out, Cheick Tiote out. Vernon Anita tried to hold down the middle. But Newcastle's gut was so soft-centred, even 5'8", little Okazaki could score on a header to tie up the game unchallenged as he let like little Godzuki to head over the Newcastle goal line.
I think the Newcastle fans will feel that they blew it at the end of the first half with that Jamie Vardy goal in added time at the end of the first half. Because, yes, they'd been outplayed, but they'd held them until that point. And then that goal really in... Ivor Bennett time, Rog, ripped them apart. In the second half, it all fell apart for them.
And now Leicester City's American bandwagon. It's North Dakota-sized, and it's growing. It's growing, which is an amazing achievement for the city, for the club, for that long-suffering fan base. At McKenna99 tweeted in to say, I'm proud to say I'm a lifelong Leicester City FC fan for almost 2 weeks now. Go Hounds! I mean Foxes.
Yeah.
She tweeted, bottom of the table. Top now. They are the story of the season, David. I love Vardy's post-match speech to his teammates.
Churchillian, yeah. Rog. Churchillian.
We've always asked, what does the fox say? You should Google it. Google his post-match speech and you'll find out when he says, beers on the coach on
beers
the plane.
Beers on the gaffer, put beers on the coach on the plane.
All I'll say, Davo, is everything, even in my life, Davo, everything feels a little more hopeful with Leicester City at the top of the table. And the question is, how long will they stay there?
Well, yeah, but enjoy it while they're there. And we're in a league where everyone is beating everybody else up. I looked at the league table this time last year, Rog. You know, Chelsea on 33 points, went all the way down to Leicester on 10. But there were real gaps between teams. Now sort of everyone is in this sort of great...
peloton.
Yeah, exactly. It is a peloton. And you win a couple of matches on the trot in this league, and your position massively, massively changes.
I'd say, you look at Leicester's schedule. Manchester United this weekend,
mm-hmm.
first versus second. Chelsea, Everton, Liverpool, then Manchester City away in 5 of the next 6 games. We will see exactly where they end up after the Christmas crunch. But I did love Sunday morning to wake up to Leicester City's official account tweeting, good morning, Foxes fans. Shall we have a look at the Premier League table? Of course we should. And then I clicked on it and you just saw how much abuse from fans of United, Arsenal and City they received. I've got to ask, what kind of a person trash tweets little Leicester City celebrating their top of the table accomplishment? Other than Nigel Pearson, Darth Vader and Coulter or King Joffrey. I don't know who would spew hate on little Leicester.
Talking of everyone beating everybody up, Rog, Manchester City 1, Liverpool 4. Jurgen Klopp's frenetic, fast-paced brand of gegenpressing football suffocates the league leaders at home. A series of incisive moves from Coutinho and Firmino saw Liverpool garner a 3-0 lead just 32 minutes in. Sergio Aguero pulled one back with a long-range howitzer just before halftime. But in the 81st minute, a Martin Skrtel wonder strike. Let me say that again, Rog. A Martin Skrtel wonder strike put the nail in the coffin and sent City tumbling into third.
Oh, the storyline going into it was Raheem Sterling meets with his old teammates. All the booze cascaded down.
Come on, Raz. Come on, Raz.
That was Joe Hart. But once he took the field, the Liverpool fans, every time he touched the ball, cascading booze.
Yeah.
And I just wondered, if that hurt James Milner's feelings a little bit.
Yeah, maybe.
City fans were not arsed enough to boo him for defecting. But irrespective, he turned out to boss the game in the heart of Liverpool's midfield. Broke up City's play. Liverpool just charged out with an incredible newfound confidence. Pressing with verve when they were out of possession. And it was that pressing which just led to an instant opener. Coutinho forcing Sanya to spill the ball. And Sanya just looking haplessly on as the cheeky Brazilian left him in his wake.
Wonderful move down the left, Rog. But in the end, very creative finish by Mangala for the own goal. I like an own goal with a creative finish.
Yeah.
Showed some imagination to get his back foot into that.
Yeah, there's not a Liverpool striker who could finish like that, Davo. Yeah. But you have to say, Mangala, Deeney, Arteta, what a day. What a weekend of own goals. And actually, on Friday night, I rewatched Two Escobars the night before, a movie about the most famous own goal of all time. I feel a tiny bit responsible, Dave, for all of these howlers. Coincidence? I think not. And the big question immediately came in as soon as Mangala owned gold from at Metro Steel 107. Does this mean Man City scored too early or Liverpool, Dave? How does it work, Dave?
I tell you that the rules of scoring too early are very, very difficult. Own goals only confuse it, Rog. I think this certainly, we can just in hindsight say that it was not too early at all for Liverpool.
Well, City and, answered the question for us by playing very, very so turgidly. They are such an odd English superpower. They've got a squad that's stopped like a trout farm, but they're always capable of just like phoning in a complete dud of a performance. And without David Silva and with Yaya Toure lolloping with no intent at all, there was just no team play. All that was cohesive was in a red shirt. City played like a team that had never before heard of the exotic move called the backheel.
But you also look back to the beginning of the season. They won five games in a row. What everybody was talking about in this short Premier League narrative. And we're only talking about a couple of months ago, Rog, and people were saying, oh, Man City are going to run away with the title. Can anybody catch them? Oh, not if they play like this. And certainly doesn't seem that there's any way they're going to stop playing like this. And this is this slightly strange thing about Man City under Pellegrini. Capable. There is no team capable. And I would say this, even accepting Chelsea. Chelsea's heights are nowhere near the heights of Man City. But Man City's depths are down there with anyone. There's just the variance between their high points and their low points. It's just magnificent. It's actually, to me, what makes them an attractive team to follow.
You know, I'd say the same about Liverpool right now in terms of that variance. They're coming off the Crystal Palace walloping.
Well, theirs is home versus away, where they can gegenpress and when they've got a pressure to keep the ball.
You know, I think it's too early in Klopp's reign to be able to make these kind of definitive decisions about them. I think here he picked Firmino and Coutinho ahead of Benteke and the returning from injury for this moment at least Daniel Sturridge, who were on the bench, and it was that selection that was inspired.
Yeah,
I mean, the two of them weren't on international duty, so they've been able to work together on the training ground with Jurgen, and Lee Dixon was just in commentary talking about how Klopp was going mad on the sideline with Firmino. He was angry with him because he was playing like a midfielder who occasionally was a striker instead of being a focal point striker who occasionally dropped back into midfield. And within seconds of that tongue lashing, Firmino just proved his worth with a stunningly incisive pass on the counter to set up Coutinho.
For a first-year player in the Premier League, he seems to be learning very, very quickly, Firmino. And I think like a lot of those Liverpool players, they found the perfect manager in Jurgen Klopp. In that game, though, you look at the performances, the unsung, you mentioned him earlier. James Milner was absolutely magnificent in this game. You look at Lallana, you look at the kind of football that he's playing under Jurgen. Just really, really fantastic stuff.
Yeah, I mean, James Milner said after the game about Klopp, he'll tell you if you're not doing the right things. He's in the game, on the sideline. You know he's there with you. He wants you to do well. He knows you'll make mistakes. He'll give you a rocket. He's essentially moving the Liverpool team around that field as if they're a FIFA game and he's got the control paddle, Davo. But that Coutinho and Firmino burgeoning relationship. So honestly, for me, it was like watching Broad City for the first time. I mean, with insert telepathic forward play in place of comedic timing. Coutinho, clearly the Alana. Firmino, he's like Abby with a neck tattoo. And that counter-attack, Davo. I mean, the third goal, when you watch it, Firmino adding after that Emre Can backheel. It was aghast. It was like watching something we'd seen before, Dave. It was like watching Suarez era Liverpool. Hashtag poetry in motion.
I mean, it was the intelligence of three players there. The movement, the perfect weighting on every single ball in that move. Shapes is what I screamed when we watched it. Shapes. I used to have a mate in college, when he was dancing, he would throw shapes. And when he was on the dance floor, he'd just shout, shapes. And it was just that was the first thing that came into my head.
What's He's happened to him?
Writing books. He very is. Successful. But shapes is a... is just what occurred to me is that they were like drawing, they were painting. It was like Ray Hudson and his paint palette. They were just painting their creativity all over the pitch.
I honestly got post-traumatic stress watching them in that first half. Took me back to January 2014, the derby at Anfield, where Liverpool just tore Everton apart, Suarez and Sturridge then on the counter. And every time Everton attacked, Liverpool just scored. The spectacle was so shocking. Ole White referred to it as barely believable. It's got to be a point, and I thought it could come in this game, where he just smashed the glass, Arlo, and used the adjective full-on unbelievable, because that's what it was, David. And Kompany, he couldn't believe it, poor guy. The cameras kept cutting to him on the sideline for City, looking on incredibly glumly. A great tweet from @SportingIntel with a stat. He said, Man City Premier League goals conceded with Kompany on the pitch, 720 minutes, 1. Man City Premier League goals conceded without Kompany, 405 minutes, 11. And without David Silva, without Kompany, the brains has just been ripped out of this Manchester City team. Even though Kun Aguero netted from a shot that was barely even a half chance, City were so poor. They got rid of Yaya Toure at half time. He was there in body, but not in spirit or soul. Yaya Toure is Gerrarding before our eyes, David.
Well, Yaya Toure is the poster boy for that, for the delta between his best and his worst.
Yeah, that halftime hook, the captain's armband disappearing, it was deserved and it was incredibly humiliating. I mean, I've got to say, I bet you Pellegrini wished he could have brought on Ned Grabavoy at halftime. Hashtag Jason Christ for Manchester City.
Yeah.
Because they came out that second half.
I'd say that's unlikely.
I'd love to see it.
Yeah, it's unlikely.
I'd love it. City came out with less than an idea. It was more a partial idea, half-baked idea. And the second half, it was just helter-skelter. A goal for either side would have kind of changed the face of the game. It was like watching a Bond fight where a well-trained villain fights James on top of a speeding train. Mm-hmm. Liverpool wanted that fourth. They kept on pressing. City struggled. But once Aguero had gone, they couldn't create anything. De Bruyne, he's like an amazing television set that's on mute. And Iheanacho, he's so willing, but he's got the first touch of a giraffe calf. And ultimately, you look at it, and you know it could have been worse, Davo. Joe Hart. Two fantastic saves
in the second half. But it was Skrtel, Rog, who, it was saying something, scored the goal of the game. Martin Skrtel, a wonder strike from the edge of the area, Rog. Amazing, amazing finish. I'm not sure that anyone will hit one harder.
Oh, we think the nets have been extra mic'd up because they make a gorgeous sound when that ball hits the back. Who wants to sex Martin Skrtel?
Yeah.
I said on the show, as he slid towards the cameras like the fifth horseman of the apocalypse, you just looked in his eyes and you knew he was thinking war, famine, conquest, death, and me, Martin Skrtel. So Klopp, Davo.
Yeah.
Liverpool fans made him feel lonely 2 weeks ago when they walked out at Anfield during the game. Rightfully, though, now, Davo, They're going to feel what's possible. I mean, what a difference an international break makes. Just a complete turnaround. Fascinating stat. Liverpool have won all four of the games Firmino started under Klopp after winning none of the four that he started under Brendan Rodgers. But you look at this team. Talk about deltas. They win at Chelsea. They were turned over by Crystal Palace. And then this. What highs and lows their poor fans have been through this. Well, not just this season. The past three seasons. But this win. It's going to make them believe again in their new leader who parades down that sideline like a giant Teutonic Care Bear.
And it's symptomatic, though, of the Premier League this season. It's that so much of the Premier League seems to be coming down to those moments of mental toughness, your mental preparation, those big moments, how you handle them, and how you respond. Everybody is capable of beating you, Rog, on any single day. Look, Sunderland then turned over Crystal Palace yesterday. Newcastle, they beat Chelsea. Like, everybody can beat everybody in this league. It's going to take enormous mental toughness. And a guy like Jurgen Klopp, in your technical area, making you believe in yourself, that's going to do a pretty good job in this modern era.
I loved it. Simon Mignolet said to the BBC, he said, Jurgen Klopp has hugged all the players at Liverpool, and he admits the hugs give him, quote, a good feeling. I've got to say, being hugged by Jurgen Klopp, it must feel like being returning to the womb a little bit.
The hugs give you a good feeling.
Be, oh, I love a hug.
You love,
love
hugs.
A cuddle. Love.
Okay, I'll give you love one after a hug. The podcast.
I would love, and one of my goals for the next 18 months to be hugged
by Jurgen Klopp.
Because that man is going to be looking at the hectic holiday period, Dave.
Yeah, but you want him to give you a hug for real. You don't want sort of a pity hug from Jurgen Klopp.
I'll take anything. I'm not fussy.
Yeah.
I'd love him to spoon me. He's going to look at the hectic holiday period. Like, I mean, he's going to look at like a Bavarian glutton looks at a knockwurst, bratkartoffel, almond, spiegel eye and a side of speck.
That's
David.
Just what I was thinking.
He's going to fancy his chances. He is going to fancy his chances of running on the outside of the pack to grab that fourth place. You know he is.
Yeah, absolutely. Lots of teams could make it into the top four this year.
Biggest tactical question.
Yeah.
From at Weizenfeld.
Mm-hmm.
Does Jurgen Klopp wear Lisa Loeb glasses?
Oh, interesting.
I see him more as a kind of Jill Sobule.
Yeah, very true. Another shock result in this weekend of shock results, Rog. West Brom 2, Arsenal 1. Arsenal failed to take advantage of City's stumble despite going 1-0 ahead behind a 28th-minute Olivier Giroud header. After watching West Brom storm back and take the lead, Arsenal had a chance to level the score via penalty in the 84th minute. But as human teddy bear Santi Cazorla approached the spot, his plant foot gave out and he sent the ball and most Arsenal fans' faith in a higher being spiralling into orbit.
As I said on the show, Davey, this game was like watching a fight between a preppy weekender and a local townie in the Hamptons.
I've been there.
Oh, it was dark. Yep. Really dark, man. I mean, Arsenal, God love you. You entered 5 wins out of the last 6 in the league.
Uh-huh.
And then you left the game stumbling with fear that the season has entered Groundhog Day for Arsenal. We've talked a lot about how this consistent Arsenal have been a wonder to watch this season, but we kept saying the only thing that can derail them would be injuries. And so, the defensive fragility that's long plagued Arsenal just snapped back into focus. 30 minutes in, Coquelin dived in with both legs extended and then limped off to be replaced by Mikel Arteta.
Yeah, your old mate.
Who later was injured himself and then had to be subbed off in the most Arsenal-y happening of the season. And Coquelin is going to be out, according to Wenger, for 2 months. My Arsenal mate, Michael Cohen, told me that when Arsene Wenger says someone's likely to be out for 2 months, that means they're either going to be out for a year or they're dead.
Yeah, that certainly made a huge difference in the game. West Brom stormed back, started dominating the centre of the park, certainly when they were out of possession. But it was a set piece, Rog, that got West Brom back into the game. First of all, delivery from Brunt onto the right foot of Morrison.
Yeah, and we watched as Arsenal of new became Arsenal of old. Per Mertesacker suddenly returned to being a lolloping liability. That Koscielny, like Bakary Sagna of City, later hinted that, in this one, according to Wenger, that he was deeply and understandably impacted by the slayings in Paris. And Bellerin, who's been so fast, so furious, was just torn apart over and over and over again by James McLean.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to dust off a line that we've not used in some time.
It would get worse for Arsenal.
As McLean ran down the line,
took
the ball and just banked it home off poor Mikel Arteta. A man I used to love, Davey. Completely befuddled. And then another man that's completely befuddling. The camera's cut to Tony Pulis on the sideline.
What did he say he looked like on the show?
He looked. He wears these Addy sneakers,
yeah,
and he always sticks religiously with his old school shell suit. I think he only picks teams that are sponsored by Adidas.
Yeah.
It's the only contract stipulation that he has for his agent. He looks straight out of Hollis, Queens, circa 1985, like he's just inked a new contract with Def Jam. I just imagine him rhyming in his angry Welsh brogue for Rick Rubin, David.
Yeah.
My Adidas, to walk through concert doors and roamed all over Coliseum floors. Stepped on stage at Live Aid and the people gave and the poor rock paid. Tony Pulis. He is amazing and he sticks to it. And I also admire how his name's actually Anthony Pulis. His initials are actually AP, but on this, it's always TP. Yep, TP.
Which is also the same as toilet paper.
Tony, man of the people.
Very good. Short legs, long body. I like that in a man.
The frustrating thing for this, though, Dave,
Arsenal
had their chances. God, did they ever. Yeah. Joel Campbell.
Oh, that was a miss.
A Wando grade miss. I mean, elite striking, it's all about anticipation. Joel Campbell anticipated his own humiliation. That was about the only... Arsene Wenger, they cut to him on the sideline. If you watched it in freeze frame,
yeah,
you could spotlight the exact second he made a mental note to transfer exiled Campbell to Turkey. And then all the old Arsenal tropes reemerged: the thinness of the squad, the lack of leadership. But they still had that
Piers
chance,
Morgan,
David.
Tweeting Wenger out.
84th minute, David.
Yes, Sanchez brought down in the box. Clumsy challenge. Santi Cazorla steps up to take the penalty. Gardner comes in and trash talks him. I wish I could have heard what he was saying.
Oh, it's Nick Kyrgios.
Yeah.
Grey crap, whatever it was. It was really amazing. Whatever he said to him, it just got into Cazorla's head. It just worked a treat. Because Atberg92 said, that penalty, poor guy, Santi Cazorla spiraling over the bar after slipping John Terry style. He said, that penalty was the most English thing ever taken by a Spaniard. Poor Arsene post-game. He rued the missed penalty. He talked about the Campbell howler, the leaking of an own goal. But the stat that is brutal for this is West Brom scored two goals despite attempting just one shot on target the entire game.
Yeah, I know. That's amazing.
And Arsenal can say, you can say to yourself, all these factors, it conspires to make this just a speed bump. But the Coquelin injury, Dave, is going to sting long after the drop points are forgotten.
And also, I think it once again goes to the mental toughness question. To win the Premier League this year, though, with everybody capable of beating you weekend in, weekend out, who is going to be mentally tough enough to go and win when the chips are down, Rog?
Yeah, I mean, now Arsenal fans are just torturing themselves by talking about the January transfer window rumour list. Mm. Bayer Leverkusen's Lars Bender, Sporting Lisbon's William Carvalho are amongst those who are being banded around. I just imagine Arsene Wenger, poor guy, stripped to his undies, looking himself in the mirror on Sunday night and just staying stupid, stupid, stupid over and over again as he sobbed. But one Arsenal story that's both positive and staggering this week, Davo, it's beautiful.
Yes, bench warmer Mathieu Flamini secretly created a company that made a scientific breakthrough, Rog, that could bring an end to the use of fossil fuels. The New York Post marveled at Flamini's company, GF Biochemicals, when they announced Monday that it had figured out how to mass produce levulinic acid, an organic compound that can replace oil in all of its many forms. In theory, GF Biochemicals' discovery means an end to gasoline, biofuels, and plastics as we know them. It also means Flamini's company could be the first entrance in a brand new market worth upward of $30 billion. $30 billion with a B, Rog. Flamini.
That is more shocking for me to read about than if the New York Post had an article about how Lee Catamol had cured cancer.
It's
just extraordinary, David.
Okay, mental toughness, Rog. Watford 1, Manchester United 2. Louis van Gaal's army escaped the sterile confines of Vicarage Road. Looks like a storage unit on the edge of an industrial estate, Rog, with a hard-earned 3 points. A thumping Memphis Depay volley and 87th-minute Troy Deeney penalty had the game headed for a certain draw when, in the 90th minute, Bastian Schweinsteiger banked the ball off Troy Deeney and into the Watford goal. United move up to second place, just 1 point behind Leicester.
Kike Sanchez Flores.
Oh, yeah.
Versus Louis van Gaal.
Yeah, two very different men, one would assume.
It's a Scrabble player's dream managerial matchup.
Yeah.
Imagine triple word scoring all of that, David.
It'd be amazing.
Game started with a question. United striking crisis so bad, Rooney sick.
Yeah.
And more importantly, Anthony Martial injured. Van Gaal had to start Memphis for the first time in 7 weeks. The world's most expensive temporary spare tyre you keep in the trunk in case of emergencies was bolted onto the United team. I've got to say, Rooney's decaying bluntness, Dave, it's got to such a point. I imagine opponents are actually miserable when he's not starting. But well, in Memphis, 12th minute, first chance, Watford nervy and characteristically sloppy. A Herrera pass floats in.
Depay puts it away, Rog.
With authority. That haircut there.
Oh, my word. Those sideburns.
Full-on tribute to Starburns from Community.
Yeah, young men with too much time on their hands.
And that was it. The goal took the steam out of the game. Watford had scored just 3 times at home all season. They played without belief. They seemed like a journeyman boxer just hoping for one mistake that would give them a chance. United moved to a back three when Herrera limped off and they hoped to spring Lingard. It should be said, he did fail to kind of capitalise on his opportunity.
Yeah, he had some good ones.
Oh, every chance he had, he muffed. Including that one-on-one break, which he blundered as if he was Wayne Rooney in disguise.
Yeah, all he had to do was lob the keeper.
And then Chelsea loanee Nathan Aki came on, changed the game. in Watford's favour.
Yeah.
He just gave the Hornets a composure on the ball, a presence on the flank. Mm-hmm. Watford tried to turn the screw. Felt like a very different game. United, one great player stepped up.
Yeah, David De Gea, Rog, made some incredible... I mean, he has such presence in the box. Guy that people used to call flappy hands. He has such presence. And he's capable of making saves that you just can't see other players making. Almen Abdi had a shot from the inside shot. Left position. Oh, it was magnificent. He readjusted in a split hundredth of a second and kept that ball out. Amazing save.
Made it look blasé, Davo.
Yeah,
and routine. I always remember Edwin van der Sar, the great United keeper of the modern period after Schmeichel. He used to say that being United's goalkeeper is one of the hardest roles in sports because mm-hmm. you do nothing for 80 minutes and then just have to make one outstanding save when you're called upon. De Gea makes those exceptional saves. He makes them look like a matter of routine. He actually made the case for him to be in the nominations for Player of the Year so far.
Well, Man United have conceded 9 goals all season. This is why I look at them in the table and I think the ability to win these close games or get results out of these close games, plus they're just defensive solidity, Rog, and it's really De Gea at the back who saved them again and again and again. I like them, Rog. I like them. I agree. They don't play the most attractive football, but if you're failing to concede goals in a season where everybody is beating everyone, that is going to help you a lot when it gets to the end of the season.
They haven't conceded, and then they did. In the 86th minute, Rojo just... I mean, he Holly Holmes, though, Dion Eagle.
Yeah, it was a bad challenge.
Troy Deeney stepped up, blasted the penalty home.
Yeah.
It was the first goal United have conceded in 632 Premier League minutes. You've got to credit them. Because then United showed spirit. They stepped up. The tiny bit of the game left, Dave. And what did they do with it?
Yeah, they figured away. 90th minute. Amazing event. Bastian Schweinsteiger really puts the ball just back into the box. A hopeful ball, hoping to find one of his strikers. And Troy Deeney, just being the hero down at one, became the goat at the other. And he barrels it into the back of his own net.
But that play by Schweinsteiger, it's the kind of play that must have made the manufacturer of a certain little Bastian Nazi doll in Chinese toy company very, very happy.
Yeah.
Bet they're suddenly flying off the shelf again. Mm-hmm. By the way, I want one of those if we got listeners in China. United briefly topped the table. At Stephen Shu tweeted us, are United the crappest number one since Chumbawamba's tub thumping? If they're top of the table, Davo, which they briefly were until the mighty, mighty Foxes knocked them off, what does it say about the Premier League right now?
Well, I don't think it says anything about the Premier League. I think it says something about football, and it says something about where it's going. Look, frankly, Chelsea have won several titles over the last few years by being defensively better than everyone else. Defense is just as important as offense. In that interview that Jurgen Klopp gave before the game when asked, like, how Liverpool going to win, he said, well, we have to shoot the ball in the goal and not concede at the other end. And that's very true. Not conceding at the other end is a very effective way to gain points in any game of football.
I look at them, Dave, as when we love the parity of this fantastic Premier League season.
Mm-hmm.
But any other year, say an informed Chelsea or an imperious City, this United side will be 10 points back already. But they're going to be challenging all season long. They're going to be like a turd that you can't flush down the toilet. I think you call it a floaty in America.
Yeah.
They're a footballing floaty, Manchester United, this season.
I think, look, unless someone steps up and plays much better offensive football on a very, very consistent basis, the team with the best defence is going to win. That's what will happen.
I've got to say, I did love Van Gaal praising himself ahead of the game in the oddest of ways.
Yeah.
He said, I don't do anything more. I delegate and I make a lot of money. He said, feedback's very important, but I have to say that because when I don't say that, you call me arrogant. Told the Daily Telegraph. And then this great line, which I love. He said, I'm also an innovator and I've changed a lot. I was the first coach who was with a notebook. Now everyone is with notebook.
Amazing.
Notebook. He's a pioneer, David.
Okay, Rog, another team. Certainly with a shot to go and make it into the top four, if not win the Premier League. Tottenham 4, West Ham 1. Spurs extend their unbeaten streak to 12 games and climb within 2 points of fourth place Arsenal. Frankly, if we weren't talking about Chelsea or Leicester City, we'd be talking about Tottenham. A Harry Kane brace brings his league total to 8. Only Jamie Vardy and Romelu Lukaku have scored more. Just a few weeks ago, we were saying that it was a one-season wonder.
Spurs?
Yeah.
They're like that little kid from Jerry Maguire. Jonathan Lipnicki, isn't it?
Yeah, he's now a stud.
A tiny, cute, adorable dweeb.
Yeah.
Who, when you weren't looking, he just got ripped in the gym. And that was an insane six pack. But when you look at him, even with a six pack, it still is like astonishing to look at, because it is magical and it is shocking and it is wonderful to watch a Spurs team execute such a comprehensive victory. Mm-hmm. A team that's competent in every dimension, who undid a West Ham team that came, frankly, just to soak up the pressure and to try and hold on.
Yeah.
But Spurs are just so potent in that midfield. Dele Alli, Eric Dier, Christian Eriksen. That mix of right power, deft creativity. And Harry Kane, he's continuing to like channel Mark Twain. Reports of his one season wondership were greatly exaggerated.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Superb, superb stuff. They also have defenders who can score goals, defenders who can defend. A really underrated Premier League goalkeeper in Lloris.
I think he's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Absolutely phenomenal. A guy we don't talk about because De Gea is just excelling to such a degree. But I also felt terrible watching this for West Ham. This is their first game without the magnificent Dimitri Payet. Yeah. He'll be out for 3 months with an ankle injury after that James McCarthy tackle. This was the first start in 11 without him, and it was largely a return to just lumping it aimlessly towards Andy Carroll. Tweet of the week for me from at JRBWilson5. Wife's reaction when seeing Andy Carroll. Is that Kevin Federline?
There are similarities. Yeah, it's Plan B doesn't look nearly as good when it's Plan A, Rog. There's no doubt about it. But amazing performance by Tottenham. Amazing performance by Eric Dier.
Almost as amazing performance as plucky little
Chelsea 1, Norwich 0. Jose Mourinho returns to the bench to see his side halt a 3-game losing streak after 2 first half chances went begging. Diego Costa, Rog, remember him? Cut inside and curled the ball past John Ruddy. It was a great finish, actually, in the 64th minute to provide the difference maker.
A run of 3 straight defeats come to an end.
Yeah.
And it says it all about Chelsea's season, Davo, when a 1-0 home win against Norwich City feels this size.
Hanging on for dear life at the end, Rog. Yeah, it's very, very bizarre. They were dominant, frankly, in this game. But a lot of the dominance, as I tweeted out, was pointless. And it was also extremely tenuous. It was a strange performance. Eden Hazard looked back to being the player.
Chelsea got a playmaker again.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that was really the difference in this game, I felt.
Yeah, I mean, Cess back off the naughty step. Kennedy came on instead of Azpilicueta, 19-year-old. I mean, left back, an attempt to jumpstart Chelsea's attacking intent, but I guess also a symbol of Mourinho's efforts to show his supervisors that reinforcements are needed in January, even as he's telling the briefing the English media, we don't need new signings to finish in the top four. And then Kennedy starts at left back. Chelsea, they started with a speeder part. They just seemed to want to stamp their authority on this early. It wasn't just Hazard. Zouma, I thought, was terrific. Hazard is out of his coma.
Also, Hazard was playing centrally, Rog, which makes a massive difference with Kennedy and Willian sort of locking down that left flank and Ivanovic getting some protection on the right. It enabled Hazard to play in the centre, and in the centre where he can truly play make. That's one of his best performances in the centre of the park for Chelsea, actually.
At Darren Edwards tweeted, John Terry played like John Terry of old instead of old John Terry. And then another player. I mean, this became a story about Diego Costa's struggles, because he whiffed to begin with, David. I began to believe, just as a one-season wonder, he's kind of starting to be a bit Tim Tebow-ish.
Yeah.
With a devil, as a devil worshipper instead of loving Jesus.
Well, I tell you, he certainly looks different. He has been in the gym. He's obviously been on some kind of a diet. He's lost a lot of weight. He does look a step quicker. He does look fitter for 90 minutes and more capable of throwing himself around the park for good rather than just for bad. And I must say, when his chance came in the 64th minute, his third chance came in the 64th minute, that finish was composed. Looked down at his feet, got the ball into the right position, looked at where the keeper was, curled it past him. It was a very good finish.
603 minutes without a goal in all competitions end for Diego Costa, who struck a blow against Norwich City and all the American rubberneckers who were savouring Chelsea's demise. I'm sure they all flicked over to USA to watch Arsenal falter at West Brom en masse after that goal went in. They couldn't conjure a second. They did hold on for dear life against little Norwich. But by the end of the game, it was the Chelsea fans who were chanting, we're staying up, we're staying up, we're staying up. touch of arrogance about that may come back to haunt them, David.
Yeah, it is amazing how many people come and say to me, "Is like, oh, well, how are you guys going to do in the championship next season?" And I was like, nobody has said that to me already, not a single person. But the truth is, Chelsea are just 14 points away from first, just 13 points away from second place. This time last year, Arsenal were 13 points behind Chelsea in sixth place. There were moments during last season where people felt that Arsenal were going to catch Chelsea. Chelsea aren't going to win the Premier League this season, but Chelsea could certainly storm back and do a lot of damage against a lot of teams, and they could certainly influence who ends up winning the Premier League this year, I would say. Southampton 0, Stoke 1. A smooth 10th-minute finish from Barcelona transplant Boyan gives the Potters their fifth win in the last seven games. After a slow start, Mark Hughes' men up to 11th in the table, Southampton in 8th. Crystal Palace 0, Sunderland 1. An 80th-minute goal from MLS reject Jermaine Defoe gives the Black Cats their second win of the season at Selhurst Park. They leapfrog Bournemouth into 18th place, just a point shy of safety.
Oh, three huge smash-and-grab points for Sunderland. Yeah. They were dominated by Crystal Palace yet again, though. Mm-hmm. The South Londoners lack that cutting edge to turn possession into goals. Ex-Sunderland flop Connor Wickham was a later striker to flounder up front, and it was a Defoe goal after a defensive howler from Scott Dann gifted Sunderland the points. This was the kind of win, Davo, that Sam Allardyce adores, and I bet his late night bacon butty will have tasted of satisfaction last night. Big reality check for Crystal Palace, who could have gone six if they took the 3 points. They are poised to sell 36% of the club to American owners Josh Harris and David Blitzer, Philadelphia 76ers masterminds. Steve Parrish has talked a lot, and he talked this week to the English press how Palace have the biggest opportunity to grow in English football. He said there's 2.4 million people in South London, other Premier League club until you get to Southampton. We have the biggest catchment area potential of any single football club in the country. Whether they can capitalise is going to be a fascinating story. And I'd agree with him to some degree, because it is a club that's just soaked in possibility. I just made a film for NBC Sports, South London and Proud, David. How would you say that?
South London and Proud.
Which debuts on Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time over Thanksgiving weekend. I got to speak to Parrish, to Alan Pardew, to Jason Puncheon, to your heroes, the Crystals, to my hero, Kayla the Eagle. I spoke to Kayla the Eagle's handlers. And there is something magic going on at Palace despite the loss.
Yeah, very true. They do have a chance to unite. South London's had so many choices between Charlton and Millwall, Palace. You know, a lot of people go for the North London clubs, Chelsea and Tottenham, Arsenal, like myself, Rog. Swansea 2, Bournemouth 2. The Cherries surrender a two-goal lead at the Liberty Stadium just 2 minutes after Dan Gosling scored Bournemouth's second. Swansea clawed one back through a clever Andre Ayew. Back heel. Mm. The Swans completed their comeback just 11 minutes later via Jonjo Shelvey from the penalty spot.
Yet another game where poor Bournemouth were by far superior, yet failed to hold on to all 3 points. I've got to say, I remain bullish for their future. But then I look at their Christmas fixture list. Chelsea, United, West Brom, Palace, Arsenal, Leicester. And then the fear does start to set in a little bit. I did at BlazerCon, I got the chance to interview Jeff Mostyn, the chairman.
Yeah, lovely man. What a lovely man.
I asked him if the season feels like a cruel trick played on Bournemouth for them to charge from single A baseball upwards only to be undone. I said, you know, is it better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all? And he just laughed and shouted, parachute payments, alluding to the money relegated teams get when they exit the Premier League. And he also made the room laugh. I got to say this. He said, the more he looks at MLS and no relegation, the more he's in favour of that philosophy for the Premier League.
I can imagine.
A lot more football for Eddie Howe's team to play yet.
Yeah, absolutely. Everton 4, Rog. Aston Villa 0. Everton discover the quickest way to inoculate oneself against the curse of Rog. Play Aston Villa. Just 1 week after sitting on stage with you at BlazerCon, Rog, Roberto Martinez and Everton cruise behind Ross Barkley and Romelu Lukaku. Braces.
So many positives. Dominant striker, Lukaku, 7 goals in 7 games. Oh, peerless central defender.
The next Jamie Vardy, Rod.
A clean sheet. Tim Howard even caught a cross off his line, which thrilled Evertonians.
Yeah, the battle of the bald American goalkeepers.
Oh, he won that handily. And a rampant Gerry D. At Matt Cheatham tweeted, Everton with Dale Lefeo this season, 23 goals in 738 minutes. Without him, 9 goals in 762 minutes. He is a massive difference maker. Poor Remy Gard, who's just conducting frantic laboratory experiments to determine what he does have and what he doesn't have in the squad. It's more the latter than the former. Watching Kieran Richardson just get eviscerated by Jerry D would have just torn him apart. I'll be honest about this Everton team, Dave. I'm still not sure which team is going to turn up. They can look imperious one week and then just sluggish the next.
That's the story of every team in the Premier League, though, Rog.
But they've got so many games coming up, so many great games that appear winnable. Mm-hmm. So we will see exactly what kind of team they are. Darkness for Villa.
Yeah.
Hashtag pray for Guzan. No Premier League team has survived having accumulated 5 points or fewer this far into the Premier League. I've got to say, Lukaku scored his 50th and 51st goals, David.
Mm-hmm.
Just 22. He's the fifth youngest player to ever reach that milestone.
Yeah.
Wayne Rooney, Ronaldo, Robbie Fowler, the great Liverpool striker, and Michael Owen. Mm-hmm. They were all younger than him. Who would you prefer, David, to lead the Chelsea line right now? Diego Costa or Romelu Lukaku?
Well, it's a leading question, Rog, having just given his, statistics. I don't think Lukaku really wanted to be at Chelsea. Very much. I like the 32 million. I think Diego Costa will still score a lot of goals for Chelsea. I'm going to go with my man. I believe in supporting your own players, not the ones you don't have. One of the ways to pursue happiness, Rog, never look back. Just look forward. Look forward.
I like the suffering.
The El Clasico, Rog. Real Madrid 0, Barcelona 4. Rafa Benitez's side get humiliated at the Bernabeu. Not the only ones. Look at today's Champions League game. Courtesy of a Luis Suarez brace and goals from Neymar and Iniesta. Despite the drubbing, Real Madrid's president has come out and given Rafa his full support.
What a spectacle. Yeah. What an occasion. What a game.
Mm-hmm.
At Sporting Telt tweeted that El Clasico lineups, 825 million combined. Man City Liverpool lineups, 592 million. And the football, it lived up to the economics. And not just because Sir Ray Hudson was behind the mic. What a rampant performance from Barcelona.
A class apart from everyone else in football, and did exactly the same thing to Roma today in the Champions League.
I was at Camp Nou in November 2010 when they destroyed Mourinho's Real 5-0.
Yeah.
It's one of the greatest nights of my life. The most spiritual experience I've ever had watching exquisite football with 90,000 plus Catalans as their team just decimated their rivals. I think this game was an even more comprehensive victory, David.
Mm-hmm.
Just watching the Bernabeu awash in seething whistles, the white tissues, the aponelada, that disdainful kind of protest they do against the team president and against, to some degree, a lot degree, Benitez. And just one of the finest moments of the season when the ageless, dominant Andres Iniesta left the field to an ovation from the Real fans. What a man, Dave. What, he's never been in a Ronaldo-Messi debate, mostly because he looks less like an elite athlete in Iniesta and more like an employee of the month at the H&R Block in Peoria. But Luis Enrique afterward described him, and you got to excuse my Spanish, patrimonio de la humanidad, the phrase that they use to talk about as a wonder to be enjoyed by everybody. I think Sid Lowe translated it as the property of the planet.
In MLS, Rog, the MLS Conference Finals see both top seeds heading into the second leg, trailing by 2 goals. In the Western Conference, the Timbers defeated FC Dallas 3-1 in front of the raucous cauldron. That is Providence Park Sunday evening. And in the Eastern Conference, Columbus head to Red Bull Arena with a 2-0 advantage over New York.
What a pair of games to watch. Fascinating, not least because of the absence of big-name stars left in the four teams that are competing. They've got no big kind of marquee names, no former Premier League giants, no massive US men's national team legend. Christian Dyer wrote a piece that's really worth reading about how all four teams were built around analytics and youth. He talked about Moneyball. And with some of the lowest budgets in MLS, it's got to be, I wonder what inside league headquarters, a league that's really trying to market itself, the prospect of a final in Columbus, David. A wonderful city, a great footballing story, the home of Schmidt's House of Sausage.
No, we love sausages.
But it's got to be a concern from a national ratings perspective. Fantastic game, though. 9 seconds in, Columbus. Like Mike Tyson storming out of his corner to knock out Marvis Frazier in just 30 seconds. And then Portland, their cut-bound and down tifo, exquisite. That kickoff atmosphere. It's just partially, Fox really do a great job capturing just the full glory of Nat Borch's chin thicket. But I think it's impossible to watch a game in Portland and not just want to get on a plane and fly there to watch the game in person. It's magic. So one of the joys of MLS, David, it's watching over and over the Wells Fargo commercial. I love it. Landon Donovan. It's got a bit of an odd week payoff, but I think it's an advertising masterpiece. I'm sure that the Donovan commercial's got a hidden meaning. I mean, Hattrick Rick is clearly Julian Green. But I've been trying to work out who is Spray Tan Dan. Who is Spray Tan Dan? A lot of people have recommended to us that he's Jurgen. I don't think he is. That makes no sense. Some of you think it could be allusion to Wando. A few go deeper and think that Spray Tan Dan is David Beckham. But please send in your explanations. Decode it for me. Because it's beginning to eat my waking hours up just thinking about it.
The second leg of those ties will be this Sunday. FC Dallas host the Timbers at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN. New York versus Columbus will be played at 7:30 Eastern Time on Fox Sports 1. Rog. To World Cup qualifying, Rog, the U.S. sit atop Group C after its first two CONCACAF World Cup qualifying games. Jurgen Klinsmann's team followed up a 6-1 defeat of St. Vincent and the Grenadines, your favorite soul band, Rog, by drawing 0-0 with Trinidad and Tobago in Port of Spain.
Oh, CONCACAF frustration. Jurgen talked about afterwards, and it really annoyed a lot of people how important the point was on the road, causing many to just howl in derision that the notion of the great US setting themselves such ambitious goals is just anti-American. But we all know CONCACAF qualifying is proper prison rules reality. But a great stat from at MLS analyst: in our last 11 competitive non-friendly games against teams ranked in the FIFA top 100, this is amazing, the US men's national team have been outshot 10 of the 11 times. So many questions just dog the team. Guzan or Howard in goal? Wither Clint Dempsey? Will Fabian and Andre Yedlin, the speedier players, be given fixed roles? What one, though, Ali Krieger was amazing to watch as an analyst. I loved her at halftime on beer. They had two women analysing a men's game, one That's a World great. Cup winner, which I think is the future.
The US resume World Cup qualifying in March when they play Guatemala, home and away within the span of 5 days. The home game will be held in the shadows of the aforementioned Schmidt's House of Sausage in Columbus, Ohio. Okay.
A quick note from the Euros. Thank God Zlatan dragged Sweden into Euro 2016.
Yeah.
Fantastic. We tweeted that the Euros will all be all the better for Zlatan's inclusion. At Shinez tweeted back and corrected us. Actually, we're going to be watching Zlatan 2016 featuring the Euros.
Okay, to the Ravens. The winner of the coveted Guinness Men in Blazers Poet, Philosopher, Soccer Scribe Raven of the Week is Jared Witt in Apopka, Florida. I know Apopka, Florida. Dear Rog and Devo, recently I traveled home to visit family in Colorado, where I was raised to love wholesome American sports of a simpler time: baseball, basketball, football, and for an occasional change of pace, hockey. Fortunately, my parents are that more open-minded genre of Lutheran. So when I came out of the closet a couple of years ago as a soccer fan, I did it with the confidence that they would continue to embrace me as their son, albeit not fully understanding my sporting orientation and half suspecting it's just a rebellious phase that I'm going through. I'm 29. While I'm fortunate to have parents who accept me for who I am, that doesn't necessarily make it easy to navigate all the awkward little issues that will no doubt arise during my upcoming Thanksgiving weekend stay at their house. My parents aren't stupid. I'm sure they know that I sleep with my Kaká jersey when I'm living back in Florida. So should I make a point of doing the same under their roof, or mind the unspoken rules of the house so as not to cause unnecessary tension? Should I keep reminding my dad that I don't really care if the Denver Nuggets should have never fired their coach, or have no opinion whether the Colorado Rockies' new third baseman is the real deal? Or should I just play along for a few minutes and let him pretend that this is the kind of relationship he'd always pictured having with his adult son? And most awkwardly, if I meet another blue in a bar on Friday night, is it appropriate to invite him to a family barbecue on Saturday, or is it not worth the strain of watching my brother-in-law earnestly try to make small talk with little conversational phrase like, "Soccer, huh? I think my high school had a soccer team. Always wondered why some of those guys didn't try out for football. Some of them were fast enough to be wide receivers." I can't complain, Men in Blazers. Should I just be glad that my folks are making an effort? How important is it, for instance, to convince them that the way I feel about John Stones is more than just infatuation? Maybe I should appreciate that at the end of the day, they just don't want me to get hurt in the next transfer window. Not that they know a lot about the transfer window.
You will not be alone, Jared. But I do think he's got an easy out, David. Rockies had the third pick in the last baseball draft. And as your dad knows well, they plucked young shortstop phenom Brendan Rodgers from Lake Mary High School, Florida.
Oh, interesting.
My advice would be, just talk about him and only him. You can mentally picture the Brendan Rodgers of the dearly departed managerial dentures too big for his mouth variety. Yeah. And he can picture the shortstop of the future.
Yeah.
And if you play your conversation right,
yeah,
by Monday morning when you leave the greater Denver area, every Rockies fan will know that their future five-tool stud should be referred to by the nickname Brodge. That's your mission.
It's got a football, baseball, and Central Florida connection all in one. Triple whammy. Our second Raven is from Chico Fitzpatrick. What a name.
I love America.
Only in America. It is Thanksgiving. I do not know if you English have adapted to the most American of holidays, but irrespective, what in football are you thankful for?
I do struggle with Thanksgiving. Try and make it meaningful, but I don't have any kind of childhood memories to tap into. I've been watching Charlie Brown Thanksgiving every day for the past week.
Yeah,
try and get myself. Yeah, I love Pigpen.
I love Pigpen as well. My favourite character. I don't know. What am I thankful for? I think the Premier League is amazing this year. I'm always thankful for Rebecca Lowe, the work she does. Always thankful for you, Rog, not to get too sincere, because I know you don't like it.
You're fishing.
Yeah. Fishing. No, I'm not. I've already fished. I already said I love you, and you said nothing back. I'm thankful for you, and very thankful to reacquaint with my old schoolmate, Steve Parrish. That's been the moment I've been most thankful for this year.
I'm thankful for the best, worst season in a long time. Football was like this in the 80s. You could lose a glut of games and still win the league.
Yeah.
I think 81 Aston Villa held off Ipswich to win the title. They lost eight times along the way.
Amazing.
The football's not always imperious. See Manchester United. But for narrative, it doesn't get better than this. The US women's team.
Yeah, without a doubt.
How quickly we take that victory for granted, David, but it's so long in coming. Women's soccer's become ever more competitive. And this campaign, it was just a phenomenal group of athletes, amazing human beings in large part, dominating. We asked Becky Sauerbrunn at BlazerCon, what do they do now they've won? She just looked at us and said,
win again.
Oh, and with the Olympics coming, David, I hope that they do. Mm-hmm. And the final thing, I guess, third and probably most importantly, I'm thankful for, is GFOPs, the creativity, the passion, the dedication. We just never cease to marvel at it. I mean, this week, I was watching my beloved Capitals play. And I was shocked to see Ovi leave the ice at the end of the period and then just see a sign held up in his face that said, Ovi, I saw you on the Men in Blazers show. How was the pie?
Amazing.
And we tweeted out for the sign holders to let us know who they are. It turns out it was 11-year-old Ella Wilson and her brother Ben, aged 8, from the DC area. Ella's a soccer player and an Everton fan. Ben, it turns out, is the hockey player. So when their mum Colleen wrote to her, she said they were both so excited when Ovechkin was on Men in Blazers because it fused both of their interests. Huh. They went the game, they had seats by the tunnel. She wrote, obviously, they had to ask the great 8 about the pie, obviously. And to say, Ella and Ben, we are blown away.
Yeah.
What you did is just, it's amazing. Symptomatic of the passion, the creativity, the knowledge of all the GFOPs who flooded down to BlazerCon. And I say it's humbling as it is magical. I just raise my pint and say to more.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I just remembered, I'm also very thankful for Willian's free kicks, Rog, because without it, we would be going down. Your weekend looks like this, courtesy of Mini USA. Leicester versus Manchester United. That's 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time Saturday on Network NBC. Can't wait for that game. Tottenham versus Chelsea at 7 a.m. Eastern Time Sunday on Telemundo, Rog. And Liverpool versus Swansea City at 11:15 a.m. Eastern Time Sunday on NBCSN. Telemundo getting a rare mention, Rog. There are many ways to connect to us. One is our Amazon Emporium, which helps keep the show going. Anytime you go on Amazon for items big or small, just click off the Emporium page, and MIB gets a tiny percentage that allows us to cover the cost of creating the show. What are you putting in the Emporium this week, Rog?
A book!
No.
So one of the people I most enjoyed meeting at BlazerCon was Daniel Alarcón.
Oh, yeah, from The New Yorker. Wonderful.
Fantastic Peruvian-American novelist.
Uh-huh.
He's football mad. And he gave me an idea that I think we'd like to execute, which is organising a gathering of great novelists who adore global football.
That would be amazing.
People like Alexander Hamont and a writer that he turned me on to in my post-Narcos kick, the Chilean writer Alejandro Zambra.
Awesome.
And I'm reading his book, My Documents, which is a book of short stories. I don't often read short stories, but this is, I mean, most are about the everyday life in Chile under Pinochet. And his just love of soccer makes these beautiful fleeting appearances. In one of them, he talks about how Chileans don't support teams. They root for players. And so they follow whomever Alexis Sanchez plays for. They used to worship Barcelona. and they are now just suffering along with Arsenal, which is an amazing approach to global football's reality.
Okay, Rog, me, not a book, weirdly. It's a meat thermometer. Got to put one in for Thanksgiving. I got to tell you, meat thermometers have really changed my love of grilling and cooking meat. I recommend heavily, Rog, I can see you're not that interested, but I recommend an analog meat thermometer over a digital meat thermometer. Because very often when you're cooking, it's a little dark, it's tough to see in the oven, your oven light might not be working, you might be grilling outside. Very tough to see a digital readout. And even if you want to touch the light on, it's very tough because you then might get scalded by the meat. So instead, I like an analog, a white face and analog. I got to tell you, if you want an analog meat thermometer, the Taylor classic style meat dial thermometer, a bargain at $7.42. It's also beautiful. You know, a red hand on a white background, settings for beef and pork, well done, poultry, ground beef and pork medium, beef and pork medium rare.
It's just enormous.
It's not enormous. It's actually
small. It looks
small.
Like the kind of watch Memphis wears
because
to a party.
It's not. It looks, the picture's big. It's actually quite small and it sticks into the meat.
It's like the Flav of
I know you like overcooked dry chicken.
I love dry chicken.
But I like chicken that's still moist in the middle but is cooked. And the only way you can do that, the only way you can make that work is to have a meat thermometer.
Your life is so much more complicated than mine.
Yeah, clearly.
Maybe that is the secret to happiness, David.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can I just wish you and your beautiful family a happy Thanksgiving?
Thank you, Roger, and yours. You can now watch entire episodes of our Crap TV show on NBC Sports Live Extra, Apple TV and Roku. It's also up on our website, menandblazers.com.
Terry Crews, magic.
Also on menandblazers.com, a place to sign up for our newsletter, The Raven, which we produce with our partner, Guinness. Check out our Spotify account, men_in_blazers. menandblazers.wickedspaces.com, a wonder of the modern world. Follow us on Twitter, @RogBennett, @MenInBlazers, @EmbassyDavies. On Instagram, @MenInBlazers, @Embassy_Davies. We've also got a Facebook, and we've got a subreddit, menandblazers.reddit.com, maintained by GFOB's Akshay Calvin. And Alex.
Happy Thanksgiving, Akshay, Kelvin, and Alex.
You can always send your ravens to the crap part of Soho. You can always email us at meninblazers@gmail.com. Vendorpunk Rog.
War Pig.
Who wants to sex Mutombo?
Who wants to sex Martin Skirtle?
Courage.
Take that, Gloria.
Is that your analysis?
Corduroy is coming.
Abrigado. Rock on, mate.
Kung Fu Fight in America. And happy Thanksgiving, David.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving to you and everyone listening.